World Cup is now over, but the DC Sportscast will never die. Jonah, I bet that you're really, really bored today.
Yeah, no, I got nothing.
Let's work back in time to Sunday.
Yeah,
we had a World Cup final.
Yeah, we did.
It was exciting.
It was a very good game.
Germany won.
That's what I heard.
Okay, we were there. Not at the game, in the Union, where we watched the majority of the World Cup.
Yeah, good spot.
I felt like Germany was the best team in the tournament and deserved to win. I felt like we were kind of talking the whole game about kind of their efficiency in kind of scoring goals, and then suddenly they didn't score any goals in the game until the very end. I guess, what was your take on the final as a whole as Germany throughout this tournament?
So, I mean, it was a really good game. You were kind of worried that the knockout stage just kind of had some boring games, and boring in the sense of two teams playing not to lose almost. That's really not what you had. You had a lot of scoring chances despite being a 1-0 game that went an extra time 0-0. A lot of chances that you would normally see finish under different circumstances, I would think. But no, I agree. I agree. Germany is the best team of this tournament. I don't think, you know, hurrying comparisons, you know, Germany's like far and away the best team. I don't really agree with that. Germany is the most dominant team of the tournament. I don't necessarily agree with that either. I think in tournaments, it comes down to when the games are going to be this close, you know, it's good to see kind of like the best teams show what they have. And when it comes down to extra time, the team with the most depth, and then that's quite clearly going to be Germany. It was sad, you know, the way the game goes completely different way if the ball bounces a few inches one way or the other. But then you'll say that about any game, and you'll say about the World Cup. I was thinking a lot about the World Cup final in 2010, and the Netherlands had plenty of scoring chances, and how the scope of history when it comes to World Cup soccer would be completely different if Netherlands just kind of squeaks out of that game with a 1-0 win, doesn't go to extra time against Spain, and Spain kind of cuts their dynasty kind of right up the middle, and you know, it's a completely different game. So
if the Netherlands won in 2010, you probably wouldn't have picked Spain to win the 2014
World Cup. You know, actually, it's funny that you mentioned that. Might have happened, might not have happened. Who really knows?
In sports, we all love a good redemption story. And Jonah is a great, great redemption story. After picking Spain to win the World Cup first, I then asked him at the start of the knockout stage who he think would play for the World Cup final, and he did correctly predict Argentina and Germany.
Yeah, you know, I definitely deserve a lot of credit for that one. You could see my extensive notes on a sticky note when I mapped out my own bracket after the knockout stages, after seeing what the work I had done had edged out Spain. So I kind of went with a different approach, and maybe so happened to work out this time. But you know, I'll be humble about it.
Speaking of kind of, I guess not to bring you back down to earth, but I would say that there were no upsets in the knockout stage. I felt like it was chalk all the way through.
Yep.
The eight group winners advanced to the quarterfinals. And then from there, the kind of predicted favorite held on there. I guess the only surprise would have been how many goals Germany scored against Brazil. Not that Germany necessarily won. What do you think about that?
I was reading some things. You know, Nate Silver with 538 was talking about, you know, one of his statistics things, kind of saying is, you know, was this German team the best World Cup team ever? And I think a lot of what he relied on was like the mathematical results of that 7-1 win. And I think, again, like I said about Germany against the Portugal win, I said earlier here, you know, Germany is definitely the best team in this tournament. But I think using that 4-0 scoreline against a Portugal team that just blew up, didn't really come to play, didn't play any organized, and give credit to Germany where they were good enough to kind of beat those teams. But I think a lot of teams would have played pretty well against how Portugal was playing, and Pepe got a red card. And then same with Brazil, I couldn't tell you what they were trying to do. I don't think they were trying to do anything. They were completely all over the place. And 7-1, that's great. And, you know, that Germany does get the credit for doing that, but not enough to kind of propel them to be the best team ever. And, you know, it did come down to chalk. There was the games, there weren't a lot of upsets, but a lot of close games. I mean, Germany and Algeria, you saw the Netherlands and Mexico kind of come down to the wire. And you saw a lot of, you know, like if you just kind of look at it, look back at the tournament, I think one of the best parts was kind of like the competition. We were, you know, you had all the goals in the open play in the group stages, and that was great. And I know you lost a lot of that in the knockout rounds, but a lot of close games and a lot of top teams getting really pushed. And eventually that's kind of what's going to happen, is the stronger teams are going to make it out. Obviously it doesn't always happen in the way it did, where a lot of teams, the stronger teams, make it out, but it was still fun to watch. So that's kind of what it comes down to from a fan's perspective.
So we talked about the final. We mentioned the semis with Brazil getting blown out of the water. You mentioned low-scoring, boring games like the Netherlands-Argentina game. So let's jump back to the quarterfinals, moving back in our time machine. Let's go around the world. So Argentina beat Belgium 1-0. Good goal, but overall, 1-0 game, not super exciting.
Yeah, no, I mean, it wasn't, you know, Belgium played well. It was a good goal early on, and you kind of saw that a lot in that stage. A lot of teams kind of take early 1-0 leads. Germany did it against France, and they hung on to. You know, that's what you're going to get at the World Cup. Everyone was shocked when all the goals were flying in the group stage. And then things kind of regressed towards how they normally are with teams. A lot of 1-0 games and a lot of teams kind of getting that goal and just making sure that they escaped out there with a win, not trying to. When goal differential doesn't matter, when you take that away, all that's left is what happens after 90 or 120 minutes.
My beloved Costa Rica fell to the Netherlands in the quarterfinal.
The Thunder.
CONCACAF Thunder was extinguished.
No.
But only for a year. CONCACAF Thunder will be in full force. We'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that'll take it. And then the other game was Colombia and Brazil. Now, Jonah, it's very apparent on these podcasts that you clearly know your soccer much more than I do. Mm. And I congratulate you for that. But your soccer knowledge is a knowledge that I possess for spinal injuries.
Oh yeah, that must have been fun just watching him stretch it off. You've been there.
As I mentioned before the round of 16, I am an open Neymar / Brazil hater. Obviously you don't want to see that happen to anyone, but I felt like, and maybe Jonah, please jump in here if I have offensive at any wall to Mr. Neymar or the country of Brazil. The Brazilian team, well, Netherlands really tried to take the title of, you know, we have the golden ball for the most scores gold, the golden glove for the best goalie. Can we have the golden wings for whoever dives the most? Arjen Robben took that at the end of the tournament. But going into this quarterfinals, definitely Brazil is putting on a clinic with how to fall to the ground and scream as loud as you can. I felt like Neymar had a little bit boy who cried wolf.
I mean, I think the referee in that game took a lot of criticism for not giving out cards sooner. I think, you know, the dives were there, but the fouls were there in that game. And unfortunately, like, I noticed myself in the World Cup final, I would see a player go down, and then your first instinct is like, you know, how much contact was there really? And then you see the replay, and then you saw, you know, the German player get the shoulder, like, knocked into his face and get concussed until, you know. And so it's unfortunate that becomes kind of the benefit of the doubt. I kind of just come back to it's hard to, I personally don't kind of like look at it as much as this team does it more. And I think you have some players and stuff, but it just comes down to everyone does it. And you know, when it happens against your team, it's frustrating, but when it happens for your team, you kind of notice people kind of just kind of sit back a little bit. I think everyone does it. And I read a really interesting article about kind of juxtaposing, you know, the outrage over diving versus the kind of shrugging of the shoulders, if you will, of concussions, which kind of we saw a lot of really nasty head injuries this tournament, and a lot of players kind of demanding to get back in the game and really not receiving proper treatment. And Neymar himself also didn't necessarily receive the best treatment for a back injury as he was lying down. But like I said before, you know, he definitely has that reputation. And you thought when he went down at first, especially with like the way the injury went down, you didn't really think it would be that serious.
Yeah.
And then, right, I mean, you know, when you do have that reputation, things might not be called as harshly as they are. He's also a tiny guy, and he's really good at moving the ball around. So if people are going to give him that little bit of contact, and he definitely does make the most of it. But, I think a little bit with Messi, too, who has less of, like, the theatrics and usually just gets back up. But Messi gets kind of the shit kicked out of him a little bit, just because there's no other way to get him. You've seen pretty good clips of people just trying to drag him down and do anything they can. Doesn't necessarily roll around like Neymar does, but it comes down to a style thing.
That's the biggest difference. I mean, I do not for 1 minute try to assume that sports like basketball and American football have no like diving or embellishing for calls. I think if you watch the NBA Finals, I think a lot of people would tell you that the Heat dive just as much as soccer players and things like that. If you're watching an NFL football game, wide receivers are always trying to beg for a pass interference call because in sports, you're looking for any advantage you can to win. And if that's coming from the referee, then it's coming from the referee. I think what turns Americans off to soccer is the fact that once the players hit the ground, it's not just, did I get a call? No, continue. It's you hit the ground, roll over, grab your face, and scream until the referee has to come over and tell you to get up.
Yeah, I've never understood that from a referee's perspective, if they're more likely to give calls to players that are actually hurt, because it seems like, from a referee's perspective, is it a foul, yes or no? There's been plenty of clean tackles that have had really nasty injuries, so if it's a foul or not, then it's over. So I don't necessarily know where that comes from and what benefit it really has, because, you know, referees aren't going to call, they're not supposed to call fouls based on how injured the player is. And if you're escaping that into just time wasting and different, you know, breaking up rhythm and stuff like that, then I guess that's a little bit different. But from a purely, you know, from the perspective of, am I going to get the call or not? Then I don't understand why it's there either. It doesn't make sense to me. And then you get into the other stuff. But
all right. So then let's move out to the round of 16. One of my favorite games of that round was Brazil and Chile. Jody, you were at the uni with me. I think I went into a trance and became a full-born Chilean, just yelling at the television in Spanish. That was a great, great game.
It was, and you saw, you know, that's gonna, you know, those couple inches are gonna make a big difference, and you're gonna see as evidenced by the Chilean player who got the tattoo of him hitting the crossbar on a shot that would have knocked Brazil out and had them going on to play Colombia, and who knows what would have happened then, and we certainly would have had all this 7-1 talk about Brazil and kind of that blowing up. But it was a great game. It really was.
If someone wants to tell me that soccer is boring, I think I want to put in a tape of that game and make them watch it.
Yeah, no, there have been a couple games where, you know, people, even the ones that, you know, are kind of scoreless and you kind of go through, there have been plenty, like the World Cup final itself, definitely, you know, for a 0-0 game, it was a good game. There are lots of chances. It was very exciting. And then the Brazil-Chile game, and, you know, it really came down. It was a matter of inches as the ball whizzed across the goal line and beat the goalie, hit the post, and the last penalty kick for Chile. It really could have gone a lot differently, just some things had been a little different, but that's kind of what sports comes down to many times when things are that even.
You mentioned the Netherlands and Mexico game, which was also very exciting.
Painful.
We were rooting
for the CONCACAF supporters.
We do love our CONCACAF. We don't like the poor reputation that they get. We love that CONCACAF and MLS made a big statement in the World Cup this year. I guess it's now time to segue into my favorite organized sports team, the United States men's national team. Let's discuss the Belgium game. Tim Howard, I think, is the first place you go to talking about that game.
Yeah.
I like the argument that if Tim Howard is subbed out for Julio Cesar, that the United States loses to Belgium 7-1.
Yeah.
But I think going forward, you have to just kind of give credit where credit is due. Belgium was the better team on the field. As much as it pains me to say that, because I love my team, but I do think that that game was very fun to watch. Although I was probably dying inside if you were with me.
Mm-hmm.
I guess now it's kind of strange to talk about it because we are almost 2 weeks past the day. I think probably more than that.
I don't remember.
I don't know.
Yeah.
How, that's another thing, the World Cup being 32 days long. Like, the Ghana game was forever ago.
Yeah, it's hard to even remember it.
But my beloved Julian Green came into the game.
Ah, yes.
And scored a goal. It was very exciting. Almost scored a second one, which would have been even more exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess there were a lot of lasting implications coming out of that game that I'd love to kind of get your take on. And the first is kind of how this World Cup was portrayed and watched and supported in the United States. And not to kind of pose to you the most, you know, overused question that I've heard over the past 3 weeks, but how do you think soccer was growing in America?
I think whatever metric you pick, I think it does seem pretty clear that soccer is growing with the different TV deals, and you saw all the viewing parties, and that was a ton to watch as a general soccer fan to see people get more interested in it. You know, there was more conversation going around the country, and there was a lot of people following the United States men's national team and seeing their World Cup journey kind of from start to finish, and where it kind of started, you know, seven or so months ago when the draw came out. It's still growing. I think where they, you know, they have, you know, high ambitions of where they want to go. You know, the progress, there's, you know, when you break it down to the progress on the field, progress off the field, they're doing a lot of things off the field with different, you know, big names in the world of soccer coming to MLS and playing and owning teams and creating teams. And, you know, David Beckham coming and starting an MLS team in Miami. You got Manchester City, one of the world's major teams, kind of helping start up a new MLS team in New York City and bringing in some, you know, still, you know, older players at the end of their career, kind of getting some lucrative deals to come play here. So it's definitely growing. And you saw the Portland Timbers play the Seattle Sounders last night and have 64,000 people show up to that. So you love to see that. It's definitely growing from a fan perspective.
So how do you see the game kind of progressing until hashtag no sleep till Moscow?
Oh, and I, you know, on it's on the field, and you know, Tim Howard kept him in the game, but I just still a little bit kind of looking back at, you know, the United States, where their ambitions are is to be, you know, one of the top teams in the world. And if you notice, you know, the top teams in the world will dominate games against other top teams, and I think the US really only kind of controlled the game against Portugal, which we had already talked about a little bit, kind of blew up and really didn't have much organization or anything of the sort, and still even got a tie from that. And so, you know, against Ghana, I think they're outplayed. They were able to get two goals, and it was a great game. Germany, it was 1-0, but the Germans didn't need much. We didn't need much. It was a boring game, but it's hard to say that the U.S. deserved any more from that game. And against Belgium, you give up that many shots to one team. You know, the U.S., you know, they were, you know, and the World Cup, when it comes down to, you know, survive in advance, I think, you know, they have enough tools to do that. But, you know, from this tournament, it's hard to say that the U.S. have kind of like been, you know, at a place where you can think they're going to win. They've already gotten to a place, and they definitely proved where they kind of transitioned from over the past, you know, 8 or so years, from like a team that you're comfortable seeing in your group to a team that you don't want to see in your group, but they're not going to be one of the top two teams, you know, depending on the draw, obviously. But other teams are now going to be afraid to have them in the group, but I'm not sure I would say that they kind of stand as a team that people are going to try and avoid when it comes to the knockout rounds, because I know they're good enough to kind of stay in games and keep things tight, as they did against Belgium. But, you know, if you're looking to get to the next level of controlling games and being the favorite and taking it to teams and having the possession and having the shots, then there's still a little bit of a ways to go.
I think when you look at sports, especially like college football, and like world soccer, you look at like dynasties and like programs. And like when I go through the quarterfinals, apart from our good friends from Costa Rica, all of those teams, that was not their first time at the rodeo. It's like Germany won their fourth World Cup. Brazil's won five World Cups. Netherlands was in the World Cup final in 2010. The United States is not on that level.
No.
Not even, and frankly, probably not that close. Mm-hmm. I do think that the USA has made a transition from let's see if we could make it to the knockout round to expecting to make the knockout round. We have done it 3 out of the last 4 years and had a chance to in 06. I do think that transition has been solidified, especially coming out of a group this good in 2014. But I do think there's a lot of work to do to where when people, especially in other countries, sit down and think who are the top 8 teams in the world, that the United States is one of those teams. I'm really excited for the next 3-4 years leading up to the World Cup in 2018 to see how this team progresses and comes together. And, you know, I think Jurgen showed nothing but good strides, but I think Jurgen took the job with the 2018 World Cup circled. So that'll be definitely interesting. As far as the game in America, I think the 2015 Women's World Cup will be very exciting. And I really do think that kind of all that energy that we saw will carry over. And then, as I tweeted at Jonah yesterday, 358 days until the CONCACAF Gold Cup, which our friends from the U.S. Men's National Team will be back on the field again, taking on the likes of Costa Rica and Mexico, Honduras and Panama. That'll be a good time. I'm excited to watch that. I really, really hope that that gets... I know it won't get as much television, like obviously like spotlight, like SportsCenter and stuff like that, covering like every game. But I do really hope that Fox will be able to televise all of the U.S. Gold Cup games. I think that's really important. Moving from there, we'll have the Olympics in 2016, back in Brazil. That'll be interesting because the Olympics is a U23 team. And the way that Jurgen built this team, there are a lot of players that have World Cup experience that can make that team, specifically my two favorite players, DeAndre Yedlin and Julian Green. And then this is what's really exciting right now with how kind of soccer is growing. 2016, the United States is not only invited, but will be hosting the Copa de Americas, which is the regional tournament for South America. So that means the USA will be playing host to Colombia and Brazil and Argentina and all those fun teams that you just watched. Maybe even Suarez will bite someone on American soil.
You can only hope.
And that would be very, very exciting. So I really think the game is going in the right direction. Then you get another Gold Cup in 2017 and then Moscow and the World Cup will be back in, I think, like 300 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so start your clocks. I can just imagine Putin looking on as Kyle Beckerman has a midfield goal just all the way through.
Yeah, it seems
maybe the ball will turn American. Into a bald eagle and like fly around the stadium.
Can't get more American than that.
Yeah, it would be fantastic. But I have a question for you, Jonah. Was the United States Men's National Team 2014 campaign a success?
Yeah, they didn't really have higher expectations. They exceeded a lot of expectations. And things definitely went how they needed it to do with Portugal falling apart and them being able to get a win against Ghana. So yeah, it by the measure of, and I think when you touched on, you know, Jurgen aiming towards 2018, I don't think this team, Jurgen said this team wasn't going to win the World Cup. You know, the expectations were lower. So when you compare it to that, then of course it was a success. I think a little bit has been overblown because of the fact that, you know, they were able to kind of be in the games, which is definitely important, and you survive in advance. But, you know, they were outplayed by a lot of teams. And against Belgium, you definitely have to look at them for a team that had no big tournament experience together, that are a young team themselves. And really, you know, kind of this wasn't going to be their year. They're kind of looking to the future as well to kind of just dominate us the way that they did, and requiring, you know, a perfect game from Tim Howard. It was still, you know, by the measure, I really like the way you put it, of how they're now going from, you know, we'll see what happens in the group stage to we should be one of the two best teams in our group. And I think that's the perfect way to put it, is that's kind of where you can mark down the transition and what we've gained from this, and what we've proven to everyone is that if you, statistically speaking, you put us in a group with three other teams, that the USA will more than likely be one of the two best teams in that group, and we'll do whatever it takes to get out of that. So it would be a success, but you tone it down a little bit, I would say.
I guess I will play devil's advocate here, and I will do so with everyone knowing how much I love the United States. But in the World Cup, the United States played four games. They won one, they lost two, and they tied one. In terms of other sports that we watch here in America, the United States men's national team is Northwestern. They're Mississippi State. I'll follow that up with a question for you. If Chris Wondolowski opened up the door right now, how would you greet him?
Oh, I'd give him a hug. You give him a hug. He needs it. Pretty bad.
Yeah. I guess I really liked what Jurgen said after the loss of, you know, if the culture of soccer is really going to change in America, everyone coming back from going 1-2-1 isn't really going to get a pat on the back. You know, if you in the NFL go 5-11, no one's really giving you a pat on the back. No one's going to go tell the Cleveland Browns, great job, guys. You tried really hard this season. So I think that is the next step the United States needs to take, that national sports writers and media and fans expect and hold players accountable. You know, it's like you and I were kind of big Bradley defenders, and the last thing I want to do is throw Michael Bradley under the bus. But, you know, the whole team on the field when Portugal scores to make it 2-2, you know, that's not a, man, you guys just played Portugal to a draw. That was the narrative following that game. And if soccer is to become a world sport in America, if America is ever to win a World Cup, if that happens on the field, people are going to be calling for those players' heads.
Yep.
Not saying, oh, great job, you played to tie. So I think that's a big transition that needs to take place, and hopefully will over the next 8 to 12 years. Jonah, when will the United States men's national team win the World Cup?
Oh, that's a good question. I like, you know, you like to see, you know, Jurgen come from, you know, Germany. What happened to Germany when they, you know, about, you know, 10, 14 years ago, when they just really just bombed out of international soccer, and they were really just disappointing after, you know, having some success in the 90s and even winning the World Cup there. So you saw them just say, okay, we're going to start over, and we're going to start fresh, and we're going to build a team that's going to be one of the best in the world. And they've done that, and they took a, you know, a potluck from all the German club teams, and they said, we're going to be serious about development. And that's on the field. It's going to come down to development when you look at things like the academies, and when you know, your best players may be playing other sports, or your best players are going to high school and going to college and playing. It's not the same as what you're going to get in other countries, where you have Messi going to play for Barcelona when he was 13, and he's living, breathing Barcelona for so long. And he learned to, you know, kind of become the best in the world. And it takes a lot of those hours that you're kind of losing. And it's, you know, it's an up and down, and it's a cultural difference. It really is, because, you know, you don't want to take these kids out of their high schools and seeing their friends and stuff. But if you did want to become a team that you're consistently considered one of the best in the world, there's really a different way to go about development. And I think when you're bringing in to the MLS, you're bringing in, you're just buying some of the best players, and you want to become the teams that people want to watch. That's great if you're not, you know, if you're going to keep bringing in all those players, that's fine. But the U.S. men's national team, that's kind of a lot longer of a way for, you know, the development to get better, because if you're trying to build interest, then you're going to try and build interest at the younger levels and then get more money so you can just kind of feed those development academies. That, you know, that takes a while. That seems to be the direction they're going, and Jurgen seems like the guy who wants to do that, and his plan is to help the development. And there's really not many people better for the job coming from a place like Germany when he was a part of this process, and he took such a young German team, kind of worked with them. So it's really, you know, he's the right guy. So when are they going to win the World Cup? It's, you know, they're not going to win the World Cup in 2018. Please, you know, hold me to that and bring this back up if you're listening to this, and bring this back up in 4 years when the U.S. is lifting that trophy. I will gladly take mine for that, as I have gladly taken all of mine for picking Spain this year.
Actually, Jonah, don't pick the United States to win the World Cup.
Ever. Yeah, because, yeah, I never will.
Because you can pick them after the round of 16. Yeah. That's totally all right. But in the group stage, stay as far away from them as possible.
Yeah, I've been wrong a lot, so that's okay.
Now, this is completely leaving my comfort zone and transitioning entirely into yours. The Premier League starts in like 30 days or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Please tell our listeners, who are full of World Cup fever, why they should watch the Premier League and why they should keep sticking with this thing you and I call soccer.
Because when you get out of tournament games where you get a lot of 1-0 games, then you get into the league where you have the flexibility and you play 38 games and you just play everyone home and away. You have the flexibility to drop games that teams are going to play a lot better looking styles of soccer, and they're going to play to win and they're going to play to dominate. And you have the leagues where you want to see the best team win. You got that. There's really nothing fairer than having you play everyone home, you play everyone away, and then whoever has done the best after that gets to lift the trophy. There's really nothing fairer than that. If you like the Cinderellas and you like to see teams kind of go through tournaments and really, you know, teams a bit unexpected, you know, the World Cup, you had a lot of favorites, but I think when you look at, you know, the English FA Cup and the Copa del Rey in Spain and, you know, all these, you know, around the world, you know, the FA Cup more than in other countries, but you'll see a lot of lower level teams make it really far. You had Hull City take Arsenal to extra time and really almost came back to force penalty kicks there. And you get some of that too. So you really have it all. And what you're going to watch is going to be a lot more exciting than what you might watch in the World Cup games when you got a lot of tight games. And that's why everyone was up in arms after the group stage, because games were open, goals were going in. And you get that a lot week in and week out. And you get the crazy upsets that happen. And you get, you know, the 7-0 wins. You get the 3-2 wins by the 19th place team. You get all that stuff around the year. And unfortunately, you know, one bad part for them is that the time of the games is not going to be as fortunate as the World Cup being in similar time zone than what we have here. And, you know, waking up on Saturday mornings and Sunday mornings, it's definitely worth it for me. And hopefully, you know, people will kind of keep their interest. And if that's not for you, you know, stick and travel to Seattle to see Portland and Seattle play. So there's a lot of different options going around. The Champions League is going to be on in the middle of the week in the afternoon. So there's going to be a lot of options for people, and we'll see how much that stays.
Help me pick an English Premier League team. Why should I cheer for?
Oh, well, of course you should cheer for my team, Manchester City, because they're amazing and they're wonderful and all their players are lovable, and it's just they're an amazing group of people. You know, that's kind of, you know, if you want it to be, you know, if you get much more out of it by watching, by having your team and sticking with them, you could do that. You can just kind of sit back and watch and enjoy all the teams do well, like kind of like I did during the World Cup outside of the United States, you know, kind of just enjoying, you know, whatever happened. Helping you pick a team.
I think the best thing for me to do is wait 6 months until one of these English teams throws an ungodly amount of money at DeAndre Yeldon and then just start rooting for them.
You know, if you're looking for MLS, you know, Jeff Cameron plays at Stoke City. We'll see what they can do. Sunderland, it was fun to see. Maybe we'll see what happens with Jozy Altidore after seeing him go down and kind of miss out on this World Cup all minus 17 minutes. But yeah, those teams might not have the most fun results watching them play week in and week out.
So. Talk about dynasty building. I feel like English Premier League is home to that with Manchester City, Manchester United.
Yeah, those are the teams I believe that have won every Arsenal championship. Every championship has been won by Chelsea and the two Manchester teams, I believe, since Arsenal won in 2004 when they went undefeated. Parity, which is kind of what happens when you have you have such a fair schedule and it doesn't come down to like kind of like the playoffs where, you know, you certain things can just go a different way. You know, it comes down, it usually ends pretty close, needing results on the last day, which have been happening in the past, not 2 years ago, but this last year and the year before that, or 2012, I should say. So it's still, there's still going to be drama, but when you have a schedule like that, just kind of like the world, even just kind of like how the World Cup tends to play out is, you know, you get the best teams showing up. But then you got the tournaments that are always going to be fun to watch. And if you want the younger team, you want not the up and coming teams, but maybe the smaller market teams, you can watch them there.
Another plug I can make for the Premier League, that's I think my favorite part about it, is that there is no tanking in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Because if you tank and come in last place, you are then kicked out of the Premier League.
And you lose millions and millions of dollars. And it's awful. No, I love how that's set up.
I wish that the NBA could do that with the D League.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's not even it takes it to a whole nother level, because it's not just you don't want to tank. At the end of the year, the bottom, you know, five or six teams, they have a whole lot to play for, and you will see them, and when they get matched up against the big teams that are fighting for a championship, you will see them put up quite the fight. If you remember 2012 QPR and Manchester City, it was all but said and done after Manchester City was going to come in. They just needed to win against QPR, who was about to be relegated. And then they put up one hell of a fight, took them and gave up two goals to lose in extra time. You get that, and it really pushes them to give all they can. Sunderland this year looked like they would be gone forever, and then they turn things around and they kind of stun some teams, even Chelsea late in the year. So it's definitely fun to watch that, and it keeps it interesting throughout the entire year, keeps them, giving them something to play for.
I still think for me to finally embrace club soccer, I just need to let Julian get called up to the big team at Bayern, and then I'll be all in, I think, after that.
I think he's got a little bit of time before that happens.
He's 19, so he's got plenty of time mm-hmm. to hang out there.
Yeah, he's not really Mario Götze yet.
Not yet. He's getting there, though.
Oh, sure, yeah.
In regulation, before Germany scored, I was thinking that they were probably hurting for Julian to go put one in for him.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, definitely.
Jurgen Löw, in between picking his nose, was probably like, wow, I wish Julian was here to score goals for us.
Of course.
But that's exactly what he was thinking.
Yeah, definitely. There's no doubt.
Well, I think that concludes our World Cup. Enjoy being bored and watching baseball for the rest of summer. Gold Cup, 358 days away. U.S. Men's National Team, Julian Green. It's all gonna come sweeping right back. Sleeping giant of the United States. CONCACAF Thunder will be back and loud. Before I go, will Germany win Euro 2016?
They should be the favorites. I'm not gonna try and pick a team because we see what happens when I try and pick a team. But it'll be cool to see what France does. I mean, France, they looked pretty good. They're also a young team. Belgium and Switzerland both get both very young teams. When you get that big tournament experience, you see it a lot where you see teams kind of needing to have that struggling before they really can appreciate and really can kind of get to the top level. And you see Germany losing in the semifinal in 2006 after giving up two goals and in extra time in the last 2 minutes against Italy. And you see them lose again in 2010 in the semifinals. And then they take that, and you even feel that a little bit, and maybe it's just a German thing, but you see that at Bayern Munich when they blow the Champions League to Chelsea in 2012, and they just are heartbroken. And then they take that, come back in 2013 and win. So you see, it'll be interesting to see a lot of the teams that took a lot of defeat and took a lot of flack, and see what happens when they were, you know, maybe some were really close, maybe some weren't close at all, and taking that disappointment and seeing where they take it. So Germany's going to, and now at this point, you know, Germany's going to have to handle success. Spain handled it remarkably well after their, you know, in their three straight champion, you know, major championship wins. And so there's really no telling how to see what's going to happen when this German team, how they handle success. If you saw Bayern Munich this year, they dominated the regular season. They won the championship, the Bundesliga, early, way in advance. And then they ran, they had nothing to play for except for the tournaments. They run into Real Madrid, who are fighting for everything, trying to, they put everything into that Champions League, and they got smoked. So handling winning, as you can see in all across sports, is a completely different game. So we'll see how they handle that. But Germany, you know, France will be interesting. And you know, the teams that I thought would do well, Italy and Spain, they got some downtime to put the pieces back together.
Portugal's got the pieces back together too.
Portugal definitely. I like them as well, and that was also dead wrong. And England, our favorite team to
New York Knicks of international soccer.
To just watch them struggle. They're a young team, but you know, tournaments aren't necessarily their forte, unless you're talking about 1966, which I think everyone in England still talks about. So we'll see what happens with them. They're young, they should get better.
I would ask you if you think Argentina will win the Copa de Americas, but that would be a foolish question because the United States is going to win.
Yeah, the United States will be favorites to win 10-0 every game.
We're going to beat Brazil 10-0. We're going to beat Argentina 10-0. We're going to beat Colombia 10-0. I'm not afraid of those teams down south.
No.
But no, that'll be really fun, that tournament. That'll be exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And FIFA, now that our World Cup has come to an end, is now switching over to Fox. So long, ESPN.
Thank you, ESPN.
Thank you. Great job, ESPN.
Thank you.
Great job. Thank you. So, yeah, that concludes our World Soccer Report. We hope that you keep following soccer until July of 2018. But until then, go USA.